Hey y'all, welcome to the Lone Sound Magazine podcast, Music, Culture, Texas. Find us online at lonesoundmagazine.com. And here's your host, editor Jamie Siegel.
Hey everyone, my name is Jamie Siegel. I'm a journalist based in Dallas, Texas, and I'm the editor and founder of Lone Sound Magazine. Each week, we're sharing interviews with individuals who are moving our creative culture forward. From visual artists and musicians to fashion designers and producers, we're always inspired by their stories, and we hope y'all will be too. This week, I'm talking to Simon Flory. He is a country, Americana, alt-country, folk artist and musician who plays several instruments. And what's cool is we met last year when he was opening for Wood & Wire, the Grammy-nominated band from Austin, and we really just hit it off talking, just had a lot of things in common, had some common friends in the DFW area, and he gave me a copy of his album Radioville. I really enjoyed the album and was super excited to talk to him about the analog process by which he recorded it. And since I haven't seen Simon since we met at that show, I was curious to see what he's been up to this year and how he's been dealing with quarantine. Just before COVID, Simon had released Songs from Paper Thin Lines, a six-song EP that coincided with a short film he directed called Paper Thin Lines. I really loved this concept of blending music, poetry, and film to tell this narrative about a rural Texas family. I think this really sets him apart as an artist, as does his appreciation for the classics and his love for the analog process. In the episode, we talk about books and the beatnik generation, the international appeal of Texas country, and the genius of Guy Clark. So before we get into the episode, I would just like to announce that if you haven't already, it would mean so much to us to subscribe to this podcast. And if you are listening on iTunes, to go ahead and throw us a positive rating or a review. It seems really simple. It takes a couple seconds, but it would mean the world to us if you did. Additionally, we have a YouTube channel, and we are about to drop some awesome content on it. So you can find us there and subscribe there at Lone Sound Magazine on YouTube. Finally, if you have been enjoying this podcast, please consider making a donation, even if it's just a few dollars. It really keeps us going, and we are super grateful for your support. That link is in the show notes. And now here is me and Simon Flory talking in episode 115. I can't believe we've done 15 episodes of this already. It's pretty awesome. It's coming up right after this message from the National Independent Venue Association.
The independent venues and promoters from every state in the U.S. are banding together to fight for survival. We were the first to close and will be the last to open. While we all look forward to the day where we can walk through those doors once again, the fact is many of us, your neighborhood venues, are at risk of closing our doors forever unless federal assistance is provided. Details on the needed support are available at SaveOurStages.com. Together, we can keep the local music scene alive. Brought to you by NIVA, the National Independent Venue Association, a 501c6.
You moved to Fort Worth now, 2017, right?
Yeah.
How have things been there? And what do you think? You know, you were in Austin before, Hill Country, right? Okay. Do you still go back to Austin Hill Country? Or how are things, you know, how have things been for you during 2020? Let's just say that.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Hey, where do we start?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just to start with the, this has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that we were going to speak today. I was just driving through a part of Fort Worth that's very different than it was when I started playing shows here when I moved to Texas in 2011 from Arkansas.
Okay.
And I immediately loved Fort Worth because where I lived in Arkansas is a ranching community. And if you were going to go see a show or go to town, you would drive 7 hours to Fort Worth.
Oh, so, seriously? That far in Arkansas? Okay, so like not close to Fayetteville or anything like that? Like.
It's just east of Fayetteville in the mountains.
Okay.
And so that's five or five and a half or so.
Yeah.
And then it gets windy, really windy.
Yeah.
And so I lived in like right in between these two lakes in the near the Ozark National Forest, and beautiful, was playing a ton of bluegrass music, and gospel music and country music. And through a set of circumstances, I ended up on the road with an indie rock band.
Yeah.
That had moved from New York to Austin, and needed a bass player for one tour, hopped on it, had a friend playing drums from a long time ago, and ended up last show in Austin, so I stayed.
Oh, wow. You were just like, I like the vibe. And that's back when Austin wasn't super crazy, crazy busy back then.
Not yet, right. On that tour, though, we did play in Fort Worth, and I just loved it. And played it. Yeah, it's what makes it, which is the people. And the scene is the people. There aren't a lot of, like, gatekeepers you have to go through.
Right.
Like, especially true in Austin. That's what people say, mean when they say vibe.
Right.
They mean that you can talk to this person and that person's going to look you in the eyes and talk to you.
Which
back,
is very, you know, like LA, I feel like, right? Where you're like, okay, who can you introduce me to, you know, versus like, we're all just here at the same bar because this band rocks and the beers are cheap. Yeah. For sure.
I know we're on a video call, but you're recording this for a podcast, but I'm waving my arms around right now in agreement.
Yes. Yes. I feel that so much. 100%. The more I've been going to Fort Worth, and I mean, I love Dallas for the same reason. I stay in Texas because of the people, for sure. And I spent some time in Colorado and love Denver too. And I love the mountains. I love that there's music all the time there too. Same reason I love Austin, but you know, it's just this DFW community is, it's just, you know, the people are awesome and they're so humble and everyone does such cool stuff, but then they always come home here, which is, I think is really nice. You know, it's like everybody kind of goes out, does their thing, but it's like they settle here, which I think is really cool. You know,
it's very livable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to say
it. For all of its, hugeness.
Yes, exactly.
Part of the reason that Fort Worth, I think, agrees with me so much is that it's the older city that was highly planned. The old architecture, they tend to repurpose buildings instead of knock them down like other
Gary
cities.
Dallas.
Right. Austin's definitely the same.
Yeah.
I love that about it without having all backwards looking people either. There's a thriving community of dissenters and resistors around here that are just absolutely wonderful. The kind of spirit that you would associate with things that aren't necessarily of the political ilk.
Right.
These days have turned into political things, but of course, I don't know. I found a lot of kindred spirits here without having to be in a specific punk rock scene or something, or underground or garage rock or something.
Well, and it is. And as Fort Worth, especially too, it's still a good old boys town too, you know?
And that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So it's nice that you know, it's like, it's not like it's like a minority of dissenters, you know, there's a lot of people.
Right.
And it's, I also really think it's really cool that Fort Worth's been doing those grants for artists and creative grants and things like
Absolutely.
That. Have you been involved in any of that or done any of that? Or?
Yeah, the very first one, which was a small grant, just immediately about the second week of the quarantine, I applied for and received one of those, and that was awesome. Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have a large grant going up now called Sounds of Resilience.
Okay.
And that is $100,000 they're giving out to 36 artists, 30 people receiving $2,000 grants, and then the rest receiving $5,000 grants.
Wow. I thought the deadline was coming up for that pretty soon.
35 people. I got to do the math. 35 and 30. Yeah. And six. So 41 people. Anyway. Actually, they're about to announce it next week. I thought it was this week, and I was thinking, that's great timing. I could have told you about it because fingers crossed.
Right. I know. I was thinking about
I received that.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
And I do appreciate that. You know, anytime that something like that happens, though, you are going to have some issues with it in terms of how they run it. And of course, it's a lot of money. So they have to have some sort of, I don't know about a the accountability is the right word, but I have a lot of friends in the music community that, you know, it is set up a little bit like a game show, I'm not going to lie.
Right.
So unfortunately, it had some, there was some friction between the local music community and it. I personally choose to participate in it knowing exactly what it is.
Right, exactly. Yes. Right. Knowing what to expect and knowing that you can't change the way that, yeah.
Right.
Way that
I also... Right. I also know that if I don't receive one, then that's because art and competition doesn't mix.
Right. Exactly. Right. Well,
it's literally. Yeah.
It's true though, you know, and there is like that fine balance between like art for, you know, certain purposes and art for commercial purposes and what somebody can really capitalize on and making art for art's sake. And I actually wanted to segue to that because I have your album right here.
Oh, hey, check it out.
Yeah. And so I was just listening to it again for research. And I love that, you know, one of my favorite things, and I know this is a podcast that nobody can see, but I love this booklet. And I love that it has like written like typewriter style and like all the illustrations. So the musician who did the cover artwork, he did the illustrations. And then are these all you wrote all the words, or
so what you're talking about is the handwritten lyric insert. Yeah. For the album, also kind of a chapbook
for our listeners, first album in the last couple of years, right? Radio Ville,
correct? Yeah. It's the 2018 release, Radioville. Okay. Right? 19?
19, I think.
19?
Yeah.
You are correct. It is 19. Goodness. Feels like a long time ago. I did release one as I was leaving Arkansas. I had a record that I released in 2011, my divorce record, if you ever want to check that one out.
Okay. Mm. Yeah.
Salacious.
Lots of feels in that one, though, for sure.
Okay. No, I didn't. Really. Not really. It's actually a little more like I got all my friends together before I left town.
Oh, nice. So right.
It was kind of fun.
That is. Yeah. That does sound good. It's a good good timepiece to remember, too. Okay.
For sure. It was a very positive way to end cap on that time of my life.
Right.
As well, you know.
So that one's still very close to you.
Yeah, even though I'm a tiny bitty baby boy and, you know, didn't know what the hell I was doing. Still don't. I'm just older and still don't. But the artist that I worked with, and continue to work with, we've gone into a blood oath to work with each other for the length of our careers, is Taylor Rushing.
Okay.
Taylor Wright Rushing. He is... He was an Austin artist, and then he was in grad school at University of Wisconsin, and then now he's in Atlanta. He's an Atlanta-based folk artist.
Cool.
Which is very fertile ground around those parts for the type of old-timey like folk art that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he, the concept is, it's super collaborative. I mean, I'm sending pictures, I'm mailing him old maps, I'm drawing him things. He will sit on the phone and listen to me talk about these things for literally hours. Okay. And that's what it came out. And that booklet is, photocopied all of them, stapled all of them, hand stapled them.
Okay. Spray paint the staples before you put it together.
Yeah, he said that. Hey, don't forget to paint the staples.
Yeah.
So I had to paint all the staples, and I had to cut them all so they're 8.5 by 8.5, and
right.
Of course, hand drawn pressing, and Dallas stuffed them for me.
Good. Yeah. Love those guys.
Taylor did all of that, though. He even did the handwritten lyrics because I wanted it to be his style.
Okay.
And he wanted it to be in the style of Neil Young's artist, escaping my name or my face. So it's all the pictures, though, are from the recording processes. A little essay in the front is just the only way I could think to repay the people that helped me realize the record.
Yeah.
That
sounds like such a cool little journey of the shaman track truck and
yeah.
It sounds you painted such a beautiful picture. But then I researched and saw that you were writing. So I was like, no wonder this makes sense here. Is writing kind of one of the things that you're good at, obviously, but is that one of the things that you're, you know, most passionate about? Or what is it about kind of this career that you've chosen that continues to feed your passion?
In terms of the writing, I've kind of kept it for myself, and it's even harder. There's no gig.
Yeah.
You know, in writing, there's no gig.
I can show up ever. Yeah.
So. Exactly. It's either the big career or nothing, and doing it for yourself. And so I've managed to do that and keep that. And recently over the pandemic, I've become much more of a student, back again, a student of writing, and have really, tried to develop, some ideas through story form now and poetry form instead of just through song. So gravitating more to that recently, but of course that's because not being able to play live,
right? But does that ever influence
limiting,
you know, when you think of like towns and, you know, Guy Clark, obviously, you know, things like that, more of those like narrative style, or, you know, even Bob Dylan, you know, very poetic in his lyrics, and
right,
and so you know, what are, is that kind of some of the, is that, do you adopt, I guess, you know, some of those kinds of, absorb that kind of style with your own writing style, or has that affected your writing style, or affected the topics that you're writing about at all?
Well, the goal is to write a Guy Clark song every time. I mean, just like for real, somewhere Guy Clark, and it's like Guy Clark and Rocky Erickson having a conversation. You know, with whether it's, you
know, love that description.
Depending on the song, they might be having a conversation with an old, you know, it depends on what the flavor is. But just in terms of lyrically, I say that's the goal, but that's only because finding them a little later in life, when I was in my early 20s, I really you know, had already gone to school for writing, had already done the thing that Townes Van Zandt did, which was study the Romantics, you know, and then the and the Beatniks and everybody. It's like, it's not that I knew anything, but I had read it, you know,
I had
actually
kind of like lived it in some respect.
Understood.
Right?
You kind of felt,
and I have Guy Clark's Without Getting Killed or Caught biography, and it's all
Tamara Saviano.
Yes, Tamara. Yes. Yeah. So
I love Tamara.
I hear she's making a movie, and I hope that it's,
I've heard,
I hope that it still happens with 2020, but it's on my list of things to follow up with, actually. But
yeah,
you just never know. But it's,
she's a ally, she's a friend, and she works with still works with Kris Kristofferson, which is just fantastic.
So cool. Oh my gosh,
the coolest. Yeah. So just like, even being like, I don't care if I'm 20 degrees away, but even being a couple degrees away, just like, just being in conversation about the heroes, to even be on this podcast right now from Fort Worth to Dallas talking about Guy Clark, is just like, please, let's do it all day.
I know. I love it. I know. I'm like, and it's been a while, I haven't had, I'm like, I'm not ready for some more talk about this and like Texas country and alt country and just going back to the roots, because it really has just such international influence.
Right.
You know, this, it really does. Like, I was talking to Joshua Ray Walker and how like the Norwegians just love him. Scandinavia loves him. And it's just, but they also love the greats too. They also love Nashville, and they love Texas country, and they love towns and Guy Clark, all that stuff too. And that blows my mind. I'm like, what is it that, you know, I mean, I think it's like, I'm biased, which is why I love it. And I love the stories, and, you know, and they're so relatable to me, but you know, apparently there's just, you know, farm towns over there too. And it resonates just the same. Apparently.
Absolutely. That record is actually recorded in between tours that I was on in Norway.
Oh, and wow.
Norway, Switzerland, the UK, France, and the band that I was in that is featured on two of the songs, and then the guitar player is on them. We were they long time performers in Norway, and they are just, we got to play all the big festivals and do all that fun stuff, and
so cool.
It was neat. The best part was, though, the little towns and little farm towns. That is, you know,
something.
And they will just, break into a Guy Clark song in perfect three-part harmony at any moment. You never know.
That's amazing. And you're like, this is the Twilight Zone. How did I get teleported here to the Northern Lights? This is
yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. So you released a new album earlier this year, right before COVID hit.
Yes.
Do you have plans for that? Like tour plans or, you know, I mean, let's just put it all on the table here because everybody, it was going to be everybody's year, you know, a lot.
Right.
It sucks. Like so many good things are about to happen. So.
Right. I think the main thing for me, you know, I'm still looking at the calendar going, okay, would have been in Nashville this week for Americana Fest.
Right. Oh,
going up to Brooklyn. Americana Fest in Brooklyn, the other good one was that whenever I'm in the Southeast and moving around that part of the country, that's where all my family is in Virginia.
Okay.
And so when I have a show in Virginia, I can get up to 60 or 80 family members. Both sides will descend upon a show.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we were going to have a fun time.
Family reunion show situation.
Yep.
Man. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So many cool
things. That was going to be fun.
Yeah, right.
But one small, very small kind of positive. I mean, besides the fact that I am healthy, my family has been healthy. I've been very fortunate and privileged in that way. But one of the one thing that's been pretty neat about it is that when I released the EP, it acts as a companion piece, almost like a soundtrack, but kind of a companion piece to a short film that I made.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was released at the same time, and the idea, and we got to do this for the release show in Austin or in Fort Worth, and then we went through a tour of West Texas and ended up going all the way through to Terlingua and coming back up to Marfa and playing in Austin. But at those shows, I would open the show with the short film. And it really was neat because people would, it created an environment, an atmosphere.
Yeah.
It literally said the words I wanted them to hear. And a lot of times people don't,
you don't listen.
Yeah. Right. And you put some dramatic ambient music over
when you got spoken word kind of Tom Waitsy stuff in the album too. Really interesting.
And Joel from Nile City recorded that. Some of the poetry on it, and then the music, and then it's a beautiful representation of a day in the life of a wonderful family I know that has 7 kids, 5 of which are all adopted, mixed race, just beautiful family out in a farm in Azle, and just how they live their life and their day and how inclusive that is and how really what they're doing is really the good work that people can only bitch about on Facebook. You know, they're just whining and crying about things when really some people are out there too busy because they're actually are busy saving the world and doing what the work needs to be done.
Yeah. How was that? And, so that kind of whole experience of your friends and the Azle really inspired all those songs?
So not totally. It inspired, the project came together because of that. So I don't have the, money to no, it's always been I like to take a long time to hash ideas out and really do things, and the way that I've found out that I like to do that is to be really collaborative, and so to really have people like to truly make the project together.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to see a bunch of big producer credits on my stuff because I made it with the person.
Yes,
I didn't just go pay all the money or meet somebody in a suit to pay all the money to do the thing.
Right.
I love it when people do that. I love my friends that have that kind of support and financial backing and all that good stuff. But that EP was recorded because years earlier, me and my old bandmate started talking about writing songs together. And then that morphed into him making some more ambient sounds out of some bound field recordings that I had made. And then he's mixing it all together, and actually was recorded about the same time as Radioville.
Okay.
The fiddle tracks on it from this year's record are recorded. I recorded in San Francisco. And then my old band, when we came off of tour, we had a new fiddle player, and I moved to Fort Worth, he moved to Oakland. And I said, hey, while you're there, will you hop over the bridge and record some parts of my new record?
Yeah, that's so awesome. So it's just fraction, like, just kind of, y'all kind of were able to do, that's awesome.
It all worked. And even though I'm a big proponent of all live, all straight to tape, music, that was cool. And that was good to to have friends from all over. And so I worked closely I had the idea for the film, and I called up a kid that I used to teach down in Austin. Uh-huh. And I knew he went to film school at UNT.
Okay, got it.
I said, get some buddies. I got a little bit of money, like $100. Will you come?
Yeah, right.
Per day, I'll pay you what I get paid when I play a show.
Yeah.
And we just like recorded and had fun and worked with Make Something Beautiful, which is a film production company in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
With Paul Hyduke, and he just did a beautiful job on it.
Okay.
And so what's neat is that film has had the opportunity to have a life during the pandemic because it was played virtually at the Thin Line Music and Film Fest.
Denton, yeah.
Denton, speaking of Joshua Ray Walker, we were going to play a show together that night.
Man.
Right. Shaking my fist.
Yeah.
But coming up, the Dallas has a film festival called Press Play Film Festival.
Oh, I'm not sure. I've been bad at my email. Is it a Fort Worth thing?
No, it's a Dallas.
Oh, it's Dallas.
It's actually going to be October 24th. I believe the festival is 23rd, 24th. My film's going to play the 24th at the Las Colinas Alamo Draft House. So.
Oh, at Draft House? That's awesome. That's awesome.
Right next to the Texican Court, which I'm going to go stay at.
Right? We've got to get some pictures.
Coming up, music from Simon Flory right after these messages.
Here, you know, the Dallas Aurora is doing, you know, a drive-up installation. They're doing a bunch of installations in the parking garage. So they're, you know, in each level is going to be a different installation. So, which I think is also pretty cool. But when I talk to my friends in California, you know, they still can't get their hair done. You know, you still can't eat inside. Right. And so the other thing is, you know, we are super lucky even to be able to get a glimpse of like sitting outside, having a beer and some chips and like watching people play music again, you know, and it's almost like, we'll take what we can get, and it's still amazing when we get it. So with that said, have you guys been out to see music in Fort Worth, or have you been playing or playing it at any like other places like around DFW? Or
I've made the personal decision not to do that. Again, support friends that do, you know, and have had to turn down some pretty neat opportunities, but again, just very, there never were kind of the safety, you know, things that I thought, needed to be in place to make something safe. Now, that being said, I did just book my first show, which is exciting. Yeah. At, the Bloomin' Bluegrass Festival in Farmers Branch, which is, I cannot pass that up because, that is one of the premier bluegrass festivals in the United States right here. It's crazy. And they have great safety protocols going on with some social distancing circles, like drawn right on the ground.
Okay. So you got pod. And when is that? That's awesome. Okay.
That is October 17th.
Oh, wow. So October's shaping up to be kind of a busy month for you, maybe.
It is. It is. Cool. That's going to be good. And that's just a morning set that Saturday. It's going to be super fun and just, luckily 60 minutes. I don't know if I could do it, you know, play a 3 hour set right now.
I mean, going out, even just going out to a restaurant outside on the patio and afterwards I'm exhausted. I'm like talking to people. I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, yeah, being at Niles for 5 days, I think in driving to Fort Worth, I was like, I've just grown accustomed to it. But yeah, I think that I needed like 3 days to like just sleep.
Right.
And like too many just people to be around, you know? It's just, they suck, they energy vampire.
Yep.
Just by not even, they're not even doing anything. They're just there. That's crazy.
You're so right. It's like, how did I ever do this before?
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I promise I used to be able to handle my own. And now I'm like, nope. One beer, I'm like, I'm out. It's fine.
Nope. Yeah. Oh, who's that?
That's Luna. She's just letting you know that she's eaten and she's ready for her nighttime walk, but she's going to have...
Aww.
So, do you guys have pets, right? A pet?
We got a dog. We got a... Hey, Chisos, come here. Yeah. She might be outside. No, I hear. Come here. Come here. Come say hi. You want to meet Luna? Okay. This is, we already went on the nighttime.
Oh my gosh. She's so cute. Yeah, Luna's 8 pounds. She's about 80 pounds or 50 pounds. And she thinks that she's a lap dog too, but she's just so cute. Oh my gosh.
Chisos is very sweet.
Yeah, Chisos. Oh, yeah.
We just went on a walk. Thank you.
Great.
But that's gonna be exciting. So having those kind of things popping up, and then my biggest, I mean, for me, the biggest thing musically during this pandemic has been working on the record I recorded last year.
Yeah.
So that's been super satisfying to be given enough time and space and awareness to make some decisions that are not like driving between two cities, trying to get gas, figure out where to eat.
Wait, and, so what's, is this and, different and, than Songs from Paper Thin Lines?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so
I definitely want to hear about the kind of the scoop on this one. Sorry.
Yeah, it is the scoop. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's TBA, though I am certainly trying to make it happen on the exact same weekend and release date that I release Songs from Paper Thin Lines and Radioville, which is the last Friday in February.
Okay.
So tentatively, it should be last Friday in February.
Charlie Memphis' birthday, right? Because you release it, he was saying... Charlie J. Memphis is his birthday, and he was like, Simon releases albums on my birthday every
year. Yep, that's it. It's Charlie's birthday.
Yeah.
Leap year, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So the record is called Haul These Blues Away, and it's a record that I made with in a few different studios, actually.
Oh.
Mostly recorded in Gonzales, Louisiana, outside of, well, Burnside is next door.
Okay.
With Clay Parker, okay. Of Clay Parker and Jody James, which are absolutely fantastic, one of my favorite groups.
Yes.
In the folk music world.
Mm-hmm.
And I really love them, love their performances, and just, you know, when you hear somebody like that, you go, well, who makes your record so perfect? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, you know, it's just because they're just turning tape on because they just sound
just perfect. But
perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they make them themselves. He records all his stuff with an old tape machine in their 1930s sugar shack that they relocated from a plantation onto this piece of land.
No way. Yeah. Wow.
It's very cool. You know, up on stilts, there's water everywhere.
For sure. Yeah, but it sounds amazing in there.
It sounds great in this old house and this old tape machine, just like I love it. And it's all recorded live. There's no overdub stuff. So for the guts of it, because Clay, we decided to try and attempt even an inkling of the feel of a Doc and Merle Watson record called Elementary Watson. And the feel... You know, there's a lot of eras of production and music, obviously. Mm-hmm. Some of them good, some of them bad. In some of the bad things we've lived through, we become nostalgic for, even though they were kind of shitty at the time, right?
Right.
So, you know what I mean? Just like terrible, giant, gated drums, like huge, like big reverb snare. Well, okay. That's back, right?
Yeah.
You know, or even like choking the drums to death, like trucker country, and just like putting towels on everything so it goes thud.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's also big.
Yeah.
And so for me, one of the eras of folk music and bluegrass was this weird era that I grew up learning from, and that is the bizarre time when everybody played electric bass on acoustic and bluegrass records.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. That's kind awesome. Of cool, kind of not cool.
Yeah, but it's right? Like, it's like if it works, it works. But it is also, it's right. Kind of like the pedal steel and in church, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
You're like, sometimes it
you're 100% right.
Works, you know, just like, what?
Okay. Yeah, Robert Randolph, man. Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. It's like the coolest thing on earth.
Yeah.
But so I grew up with a bunch of guys playing that. I came up through with some of my mentors being a part of, you know, the Alison Krauss world and the Special Consensus world and the especially Tennessee guys from the Tennessee Gentlemen. Uh-huh. And that band was a huge band in 70s, but everything you're going to hear, or Doyle Lawson, actually some of those guys, even, and it's a huge influence on me would be the Osborne Brothers and all of that. Yeah. At a certain time, mm-hmm. had, you know, the bus driver played the snare.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody played.
Look up some Osborne Brothers tracks and be like, and look for this now. It's probably one of those things I
oh god, they're so good.
Once I listen for it, I'll be like, oh, okay.
Right. It's bluegrass, but it's got this like driving P bass just thudding really hard instead of your upright percussiveness thing. So Clay played sang a third harmony and played electric bass on the record, and it gelled really nice. And then that's with me playing banjo and guitar, and then Morris Holdall, of course, who you saw us play when we opened for Wood and Wire.
Okay.
That's Morris. He of course played lead guitar and sang the second part.
Yeah.
So that's the majority of the record, and then we I recorded a song that I co-wrote with Daisy O'Connor, a great folk musician from Austin.
Oh, cool.
We recorded a song live with a string section down in a barn in outside of Austin in Cedar Creek.
Oh, cool. That sounds awesome. Yeah.
That's going to be
Sugar
fun.
Crack, Louisiana, and then you've got a Austin... Another
barn thing.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah. Again, it's all collaborations, and hey, I'm rolling into town, and hey, can we get some people together to record this song tonight? And just a lot of, again, just gracious people that are artists and you know, can say, hey, I need to go walk around the horse pasture a couple of times, then I will get the harmonies to this cello part.
Right? Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll see you soon. And then you're going to hear.
Right? So did you do all this last year, or were you kind of doing it somewhat this year and kind of fine tuning it over the last few months? Or
no, it was, we everything was recorded on tour last year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so starting with the Radioville tour was the first time we recorded. So I'm trying to keep the projects, two projects ahead, because it takes so long to release everything.
Right.
When you're self-funded and when you have the rootsiest of rootsy fan bases, you know, just like people that are art consumers, and I don't have a dollar, and I don't care if you do or not. I want you to have, you know, to participate in this with me.
Right, right.
So I've enjoyed doing things that way, and I hope this next one kind of feels the same way and does, you know, kind of a little more of that.
Yeah.
On that same road. But this is recorded on tours twice in Louisiana, once in Austin, and then we have one sleeper track. It's actually from a session from several years ago in Nashville.
Okay,
that's also on there. So it's, but it all fits together. If you couldn't tell from Radioville, you know, it's not exactly a concept album on Radioville, but every character in that record has to have lived. They lived in Radioville.
Mm-hmm,
like
absolutely.
If there's a town,
a sense of place throughout the work, for sure. I get that.
Right. Yeah. Right. So on this next one entitled "Haul These Blues Away," it's these, every character, every situation and person is really inside of a situation that they need to get out of, and what is that mechanism? What is that that is getting them out of it? And hopefully that's what the, you know, the listener can come to it as well and feel that same way. You know, what is your blues? You know, we're not talking about, you know, the color blue or even the genre or even the, you know, kind of just colloquial, you know, I got the blues.
Blues,
it's like, you know, what is your blues? Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's, I guess, you know,
kind of peeling
your blues
a little bit. Where it allows everyone to kind of, it's a little introspective then, I guess.
You know, for sure. Yeah. And I do have, you know, probably some of the most on the record too. There's a couple of songs that are probably the most bearing, you know, there's only several people that have heard it. My brother being one of them, and he got every reference in the song about growing up on the farm we did.
Oh,
so
yeah,
that was
right.
Good.
So, right. You're like, those Easter eggs were for you, man.
Yes. 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 They were.
I love that. So what's the timeline kind of for that, or just basically February, end of February?
Would be the full record release with singles before then. So
okay, cool. So when can we hear, expect some singles, do you think?
I would hope November. November and January, probably won't release one in December.
Okay, that's a good time.
Of course we have something bigger than Christmas showing up in November, which could be either a present or a death nail, you know.
Are you playing on this album and some of the other singles, are you playing all the instruments again, fiddle, banjo?
No, the Songs for Paper Thin Lines was kind of a special project in that way that I played most of the stuff, sang over myself, played banjo and guitar, and, you know, so I was doing a lot of that. On this one, I mostly stuck to back kind of how Radioville was, is mostly live, captured to straight to tape, zero computers. I don't want a computer screen. There should be never should be a mouse click in my records,
right?
And so it's that feeling. So I only played one instrument at a time and sang. So the majority of the record is just me either playing banjo or playing guitar and singing with one or two other people. I mean, I love big, giant, huge sounding records. I've made a couple of them before with some old bands. But really, if I'm being honest, you know, it's really the, however the song talks to me, I would like it to, you know, say that same thing to you. And the way that I can make that happen is to not have this veil of production.
Right.
I like the beat. Well, sorry.
Right.
That's not the point. Which is great. And all the beats. I love the beats.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
They're great.
There's a drop.
I do love the beat, but it's cool. We did a couple of different things on it as well. We had some percussion that, you know, there may or may not be a track that is somebody playing a mason jar full of moonshine with a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Whatever that means to you.
Capture it. Yeah. Like, but I do. I love that style. You know, Robert Johnson style, you know, one mic, people in the room, or, and then I also was reading that I didn't know you recorded on Charlie Crockett's, which the honky tonk, I'm blanking on the name.
Yeah. Lil Geo's Honky Tonk Review.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know that you did that, but I have that on CD in my car, and it's one of my favorites because it does have that room sound to it too.
That's just us three playing in a room, me and him and Jay Molnar. It was great.
Awesome
drummer.
One of my favorite CDs that I CD changer. So I didn't know that was you though. I'm like, oh cool, that's awesome. But
yeah,
it does have that like whole setup, like, all right, we're just gonna like bring the whiskey, bring a couple microphones and the amps, you know, that type of thing, which totally, you definitely the recording picks that up, I think, which is really cool.
Right, and that's what you want to feel, for me, you know, that you want to feel. Now, again, that's not every genre or everything or every story you want to tell.
Yeah.
It's really the particular stories I want to tell, and right now.
Yeah.
You know, and that is right now, and it's also fascinating because I can't understand all of the magic inside of Pro Tools and the giant recording boards. And so since I can't understand that, I can't participate in it. So being left out of that conversation, and then eventually a couple generations later into the computer recording world, there's no more conversation. Mm-hmm. It's press record, play as much as you want. We'll snip it up and we'll get some version of these 20 takes.
We'll just copy the time you did it right and then just, yeah.
Or you cut up the 20 times you did it and piece together one that sounds like you did it right.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's the common thing.
Oh, so, which is really crazy to me. I didn't realize that, because then it's like, mm-hmm. Well, then if you have to play it live, like...
Some of it is so interesting that it's impossible to play live, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
That actually kind of harkens back to the time when, like, oh, man, you know, it's like Hot Rod Lincoln. When he played that tune, oh my gosh, he's gonna kill me if I don't remember his name. he screwed up on the riff and ended up having to play it over and over and over again until he could learn his own riff that he screwed up.
Right, where he's like, you messed it up, and now that's the way people hear it, right?
That's exactly right.
All right, now it's, yeah, they're like, well, now we like it this way. So, but hey, embrace the mistakes or something, right? You know, one of those.
Well, of course, that person ended up being one of the greatest Telecaster players of all time, Bill Kirchen. So,
but can be the Michael Jordan of their craft, though, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, true. And if I can be in the room and in the conversation about, like, what did that feel like?
Mm-hmm.
And to have a real debate about a take is so satisfying, because you're sitting there going, oh, no, I didn't fuck up.
Yeah.
And then to have somebody else go, yeah, and you also sounded like you were talking to your grandmother on the phone. That was terrible. I'm like, but I didn't screw up. They're right. Like, yeah, but take one, you fucked up, but it was like you hit me in the gut.
Yeah, right.
And you go, well, I guess we're going to choose the one with the one where you get hit in the gut and fucked up. Like, that's fine. And everybody else will live with it.
Yeah, right. And sometimes, yeah, I know Burton Pedalsteel was saying, he was like, sometimes I've heard myself on the radio or on a radio on a song I've tracked on, and he's like, I hear myself mess up, and he's like, I wonder who that is. They make the same mistake that I always do. And then he's like, I Shazam, and he's like, nope, that's definitely me making the mistake.
Yeah. You just gotta make it twice, like, yeah. Miles Davis.
Yeah. So what else, is there anything else that we haven't really touched upon yet? You know, one thing I forgot to ask, we were talking about how you've had a lot more time during this time to really slow down and kind of, you know, fine tune and refine this next album that you're putting out. You know, what is it, you know, in particular? I think everybody's creative process is different, and it's harder in some ways right now, you know, even though there isn't anything going on, you feel like you should have more time to focus and more time to get things right, you know, but it's also, there's tons of uncertainty and anxiety and, you know, not a lot of money and political, you know, shit storms, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, how has slowing down affected your process and affected, you know, your work? Positive, negative, either way, both.
Yeah, I realized how influenced I am from seeing live music,
mm-hmm.
and from being around and collaborating with or talking with or just loving on my friends who are artists and other, you know, creators. When that goes away, it's hard to be a hermit creator for myself, myself. One of the inspirations I had was, first thing I did was just dug into my queue of books that has been piling up, like, mm-hmm. over here that I have. Just, I have piles and piles of books because I'm a huge book nut, but right. When you're on tour all the time, it's hard to read a lot.
Yeah, right.
So I just digging into books right at the beginning. So of course, then what did I do? I started writing.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to shows, so I wasn't playing as much music, but I was digging into books and poetry, so I was doing more of that.
Which is definitely still that creative, literary kind of flexible.
It feels good.
Yeah.
For sure. Yes. It keeps that part of the brain going, but good golly, like, how many tunes would have I, you know,
right.
by now? because I certainly have written several songs while driving from one town to the next. Full entire tunes in the brain, show up the next town and be like, here's the song, guys, let's try this. Yeah. And that is just, that kind of inspiration is certainly missing. And I won't say that I didn't force myself to sit down, and I don't still, because I actually set aside time to write. I've been working on one collaborative project with a band from Austin. I'm writing another film, and they're going to do some of the music, and we're working on some stuff, so that's fun.
So is this kind of maybe the film album kind of combo, something that you're liking right now, or that you kind of want to do things, or?
Maybe. I think it's just something that I really just see, so we should make it.
Yeah,
like, right? If we see it, we should do it, yeah. If the ideas and the commentary I have about this time right now fit together better visually or on paper than they do musically, then that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about wanting to get into music or wanting to get into the movies or any of that stuff. It's not. It's just seeing something in my brain and other people going.
People should know about, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And when expressing it to somebody else, them going, I see that too.
Mm-hmm.
And say, let's do it together. So that part has felt pretty cool. That's felt good. That has felt, the word that's missing from this whole thing has been like productivity and production and all of that. And, that's okay.
Yeah, right.
Totally fine. There's so much helplessness right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much helplessness ingrained systematically into our society and especially into our political system definitely into our school systems that helplessness exploded.
Yeah.
In May and June, and for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
I didn't want to take up any bandwidth. A lot of people, stopped doing as many live streams. People weren't as doing the quarantine thing as much. It's the things that are really important aren't just, me whining about some stuff. Even if you can find the good in that, even if it is really, I also realize that. So even, I'm excited about new projects. I'm excited about, releasing music and art and feeling that connection with people, but at the same time, there's a lot more important things going on right now in the world too.
And that's a wrap for me and Simon Flory. Thank you so much again to Simon for being such a cool guest. I can't wait till I can see you play live again, maybe even in 2020. You can also find us online at lonesoundmagazine.com, where we've got pictures and we've got words and we've got some scoop, and check us out there. See y'all next week.
You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. You can subscribe to Lone Sound Magazine at lonesoundmagazine.com.